The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
If we look to the answer as to why for so many years we achieved so much, prospered as no other people on earth, it was because here in this land we unleashed the energy and individual genius of man to a greater extent than has ever been done before. Those who say that we're in a time when there are no heroes, they just don't know where to look. The sloping hills of Arlington National Cemetery, with its row upon row of simple white markers bearing crosses or stars of David, they add up to only a tiny fraction of the price that has been paid for our freedom. As for the enemies of freedom, those who are potential adversaries, they will be reminded that peace is the highest aspiration of the American people. We will negotiate for it, sacrifice for it. We will not surrender for it now or ever. We are Americans.
Welcome to Always Right Radio with Bob Frantz on AM 1420, The Answer.
Welcome indeed. Good morning to you. It's 7 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock on a Thursday, the 18th morning of the fourth month in the year of our Lord, 2024. We are loaded today, and that doesn't mean we've been doing some morning drinking. We're loaded with guests. We've got conversations scheduled all over the place. In less than a half an hour, our friend Jack Windsor will join us to talk about goings on in the legislature in Columbus. He is always following what's happening at the state capitol, and they have a few things which you will hear some of. Of which you will hear some in the top nine at nine coming up here in just a few minutes. So Jack Windsor at 9:35, Dr. Everett Piper joins us at 10:10, Daniel Street at 10:35. And then at 11:10, we are going to be talking with our friend Robert Kylo. Robert Kylo from the Center for Christian Virtue. Robert was in Broadview Heights on Monday for the Broadview Heights City Council meeting, which led to a very interesting verbal battle over whether or not there should be a Pride Festival on Broadview Heights city property. And the Center for Christian Virtue is interested in that, as were about 100 or so Broadview Heights residents that day. So that was on Monday. So we're going to talk to Robert about that coming up at 11:10 today. So that will also be a part of the top nine at nine. So we've got a very full show for you, a lot of very important information. The Senate is refusing to do its job. I'll explain that in a few minutes. Joe Biden is on the wrong side of, well, probably everything. You knew that, but I have some specific stories for you. And NPR. If you thought it was bad before they essentially forced the resignation of Yuri Berliner, wait until you see what it looks like now with the new CEO, the new chief, the new boss in town at National Public Radio, for which your tax dollars pay and mine to provide you with one-sided biased information. The new CEO has a real problem with the First Amendment. She's a member of the press. The First Amendment is protective of freedom of the press, and she doesn't like it for some reason. We'll get into that in just a bit as well. It'll all be a part of the top nine at nine. Before we get into those top nine stories, what do you say we do our Pledge of Allegiance? And by the way, somebody sent me a flag yesterday. Do me a favor. I mean, I don't know how to do this, because somebody, it was in a comment. Somebody put it in a comment on a tweet, I think it was. With a picture of their flag, and I just happened to stumble across it. I don't read every single comment about every single post on Facebook or on Twitter or on Truth Social or whatever. So do me a favor. Let me know send me a message, send me a DM, or send an actual live tweet, not a comment on one so that I don't miss it. But I did add it to the gallery that is ever growing of people who are pledging allegiance every morning along with us, no matter where they are. In their cars, they have flags, in their houses, in their places of business. One lady sent me a picture of a coffee cup on her desk, which is filled with pens at her cubicle. And it also had in it a little, small U.S. flag on those little wooden sticks sticking out of the pen cup. And that's what she pledges to when she's at work during this time every day. So love that. Keep that up. Send those pictures to me, and we'll add yours to the gallery as well. I just think it inspires other people. Having said all of that, let's go ahead and stand and pledge allegiance now to our flag and the glorious country that it represents. If you are a radical American Marxist, a Democrat Marxist, well, don't pretend. Just go ahead and identify yourself by taking a knee instead of standing proud. For those who stand,
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, that's the way we roll. It is 9-11, and as long as there's a 9 in the time, I can't effectively say...
It's 9 o'clock. Do you know where your headlines are? We do. It's time for the Top 9 at 9 on Always Right Radio.
It is indeed. Let's get launched.
Number 1.
Yeah, you knew this was coming, right? The Democrat-controlled Senate yesterday dismissed both articles of impeachment against Alejandro Mayorkas, the disgraced Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, who has completely allowed the United States to be overrun with illegal aliens. The Federation for American Immigration Reform released a statement after Chuck Schumer and his team decided there would be no trial. Quote, today the U.S. Senate took the unprecedented step of effectively dismissing the articles of impeachment against Alejandro Mayorkas that were passed by the House of Representatives. Never in the history of our republic has the Senate refused to carry out its constitutional obligation to adjudicate lawfully approved articles of impeachment against a government official. The articles of impeachment were based on a mountain of evidence revealed through extensive, months-long investigations regarding Mayorkas' dereliction of duty as DHS secretary. The articles lay out specific provisions of the Immigration and Nationality Act that Mayorkas violated and detail the numerous times the secretary has knowingly lied to Congress and the American people to hide the results of his disastrous policies. These charges were clearly sufficient to warrant a Senate trial to determine if Mayorkas should be removed from office. End quote. The Senate is not serious about protecting this country, not about national security, not about national sovereignty. All they care about is the same thing that Biden cared about when he opened up the border, importing more Democrat voters. And now we know how far they'll go.
Number 2.
At the Broadview Heights City Council meeting on Monday, as noted a moment ago, over 100 residents packed the room to block a proposed Pride Festival that's going to be held on city property this summer. Among those in attendance, as noted, Robert Kylo from the Center for Christian Virtue in Columbus. He responded to the claims made by the Pride Fest organizer, Jennifer Speer.
Clearly was not friendly. We were not prepared for the messaging, the adamant messaging.
One of those to speak in opposition of the Pride event during the meeting, Robert Kylo, who disagrees with Speer on how the night went.
You saw at that council meeting was nearly 100 people that are Broadview Heights residents primarily, just asking the mayor, why didn't you reach out to us to see if this is something we want in our community?
Kylo wanted to make clear that his feelings come from a place of religious belief and not a place of hate.
And my message then and my message now is this good for Broadview Heights? And I think it's already showing that it's not.
Speer disagrees, adding that some of the thoughts shared on Monday night felt personal.
We felt pretty unsafe, I'll be honest with you. When we left, pretty much all of us were on our cell phones, either with spouses, family members, or 911.
But when we told Kylo the safety concerns that Speer just shared, he responded with this.
That's ridiculous. There was not any animosity towards people.
And for some reason it cut out. All right, that's all right. I think you got the gist of it, though. What a load of crap for her to say that when they were leaving, people were on their phones with 911. You are lying. I would love to have somebody get a look at the 911 call logs for Monday night and see what happened in Broadview Heights. I promise you, nobody was afraid of Robert Kylo and 100 citizens there saying, no, we don't want this grooming of our children to happen on city property. Good job, Robert Kylo. He'll join us, by the way, to talk more in depth about this at 11:10 this morning.
Number three.
Franklin County Common Pleas Judge Michael Holbrook, speaking of kids and destroying them, issued a temporary restraining order yesterday blocking the implementation of the SAFE Act, which passed the legislature and was able to override a governor's veto to stop kids from being chemically castrated, sterilized, and eventually physically mutilated. Holbrook said the temporary restraining order will last 2 weeks or until he holds a hearing on a request of the law to be stayed until litigation is concluded. The ruling was in response to an ACLU Ohio lawsuit. The ACLU stated, "We are thrilled and relieved that little kids can have their organs cut off." All right, they didn't say it like that. "We are thrilled and relieved that Ohio's ban on gender-affirming health care has been halted and that transgender youth can continue for the near term at least to access medically necessary health care." I almost vomit every time I read these quotes from the ACLU. It's very, very hard to get these things without literally losing my breakfast or losing the license for the radio station because I'm about to spew a bunch of profanities. The ACLU is thrilled that a judge said, "We have a little bit more time to cut healthy body parts off of kids or prepare them for that mutilation by blocking their puberty and putting them on cross-sex hormones so that they will forever be sterilized." And they call that health care.
Number four.
Speaker Mike Johnson announced that the House will vote Saturday night on a yet-to-be-released foreign aid package that includes tens of billions of dollars for Ukraine. That's right, Speaker Johnson tripling down on his attempt to make sure that funding gets to Ukraine. This is a guy who just 3 months ago was opposed to spending any more American tax dollars on an undefined military effort slash war in Ukraine. Johnson texted House Republicans late yesterday that he would soon release the text of three bills to fund, quote, "America's national security interests and allies." What a load of crap that is, too. Our national security is not impacted by this. I'm sorry, but I'm not sorry. We have done our part. We're over $200 billion into that effort, and there is no clear agenda or path forward. We are throwing good money after bad. It is time for somebody in Eastern Europe to step up on this. But by combining four bills into one, Johnson gives the House the binary choice of allowing votes on all four bills or none of the bills. This is a very tricky, very Democrat-like maneuver by Johnson. The rule, as well as the four individual bills, each one only needs majority support to pass. And this scheme, again, was elaborately engineered to allow him to bring Ukraine funding to the floor over the objection of conservatives who have said, no, enough is enough. Perhaps that's why Democrat Representative Adam Smith says this about Mike Johnson, our conservative speaker.
Look, I am not under any illusion as a Democrat that I'm going to love the Republican Speaker of the House. All I ask is for someone that we can work with. And Mike Johnson, he's kept the government open. He allowed us to pass the appropriations bill, so that process would go through a normal process. And now he's allowed us to have a vote on this incredibly important supplemental. And I think that, you know, it shows that he can't, is someone we can work with.
Someone we can work with. There you go. That's who we ran Kevin McCarthy out for. A conservative, we were told. Somebody that would hold the Democrats at bay. No, Mike Johnson has rolled over and become one of them. Done with that guy.
Number five.
A 16-year-old North Carolina high school student has been suspended for 3 days out of school. Why? For using apparently a term that was banned. What term are you thinking of? Is it a curse word? No. Is it a slur? No. Is it the N-word? No. He used a word that is in the United States code dozens and dozens and dozens of times. He used the words illegal alien. That's right. In an English class, when they were discussing word meaning, he brought up the word illegal alien because they were asked about the word alien, and he asked whether it was like Mars or like illegal aliens in the country without a green card. Now he's in trouble. His mother says this could cost him, because of the new mark on his disciplinary record, an opportunity at a track scholarship that he was seeking. Christian McGee, a student at Central Davidson High School in Lexington, received the 3 days out. His mother said the teacher gave the assignment using the word alien. He said, like space aliens or illegal aliens without green cards. Another student took offense, and because anybody gets offended by anything these days, there must be repercussions. The teacher took it to the assistant principal. The irate mom said the assistant principal has refused to remove the 3-day suspension from the boy's record. The family has hired an attorney. Good. Sue their collective arses.
Number six.
The United States House of Representatives passed a bill from Ohio Representative Warren Davidson yesterday that prohibits the federal government from purchasing U.S. citizens' data from third parties. This is a win for privacy hawks like you and me, and it likely brings an end to the House Republicans' uphill battle to renew the FISA Act. The bill, introduced by Davidson and, strangely, Jerry Nadler in New York, would force federal agencies to obtain a court order or a warrant to purchase commercially owned data of U.S. citizens, such as their online activity and their location information. It was championed by Judiciary Committee members and their allies as an amendment to Section 702 of FISA, as you know, but it failed to make it into the final legislation that passed last week. Why? Because of that Democrat speaker we have named Mike Johnson, who cast the vote with the Democrats and opposed, and also 86 Rhino Republicans, including a handful of them from Ohio, that did not think a warrant should be required for the government to spy on your online activity. The Biden administration naturally was opposed to the bill that passed yesterday, which means even though it was passed, it will likely never be signed, even if it gets through the Senate.
Number seven.
NPR's new chief executive, Catherine Marr. This is NPR, mind you. This is National Public Radio. It's the press. It's taxpayer-funded press. Catherine Marr called the First Amendment the number one challenge that American journalists face now. Marr noted that the First Amendment provides a fairly robust protection of rights, making it a little tricky to address some of the real challenges where bad information comes from.
The number one challenge here that we see and is, of course, the First Amendment in the United States is a fairly robust protection of rights, and that is a protection of rights both for platforms, which I actually think is very important that platforms have those rights to be able to regulate what kind of content they want on their sites. But it also means that it is a little bit tricky to really address some of the real challenges of where does bad information come from and sort of the influence peddlers who have made a real market economy around it.
So the First Amendment, which protects freedom of speech and freedom of the press, as well as others, including freedom of religion, is a problem. It's tricky. How about you just stop censoring things that you disagree with, NPR? Maybe then you wouldn't have a massive expose of your left-wing bias being put forth by one of your 25-year veteran NPR journalists and editors. What do you think, maybe? How about let the First Amendment win? Let people speak freely. What a novel idea that would be.
Number eight.
A top Republican said yesterday, one way or another, Joe Biden will be on the ballot in Ohio, despite the state law that threatens to block him over the scheduled date of this year's Democratic National Convention. Matt Huffman, our state Senate president, said that the specifics will depend on whether Democrats propose an administrative fix or a legislative one. But he said even a lawsuit would be successful in light of the unanimous March decision by the U.S. Supreme Court that gave President Trump the right to the ballot in Colorado and Maine. I hate this comparison. It's going to get resolved, Huffman said. I don't want to speak on behalf of the Democratic Party. I'm not a member, but we're certainly going to try to accommodate any result. I'm disgusted by that, too. And I'm sorry. President Trump was being unlawfully blocked from the ballot in Colorado and Maine. Joe Biden isn't being blocked from anything in Ohio. His party is just too stupid to check and see what the deadline was going to be to certify him as the nominee. And if it was not with, if it was inside of 90 days, then it couldn't be done. It's the law. Whatever happened to no one is above the law. Apparently the Democrats forgot that, and apparently Senate President Matt Huffman has too, because we're going to bend over backwards to allow these idiots to avoid the shame of and the embarrassment of their own mistakes. They should have been forced to move up their convention.
Number nine.
And finally, China's sending fentanyl to the United States in record numbers. Chinese Communist Party is using tax rebates. According to a new report issued by a House panel yesterday, the Chinese communists are using tax rebates to subsidize the manufacturing and export of fentanyl materials. The House Select Committee on China pointed to the findings, saying China is playing a huge role in the flow of fentanyl into the U.S. Lawmakers made several recommendations to curb the crisis. Quote, through subsidies, grants, and other incentives, the PRC harms Americans while enriching PRC companies, referring, of course, to the People's Republic of China. That's PRC. The committee said in its report it found no evidence of new criminal enforcement actions to curb the flow of fentanyl chemicals into the United States. How about this? How about seal the freaking border and stop letting them push those freaking deadly drugs into our country by way of the land bridge known as Mexico? What a novel idea that would be, huh?
This has been the Top 9 at 9 on Always Right Radio. AM 1420, The Answer.
All right, there's your Top 9 at 9. I gave you a little bit to chew on. You can think about it, decide what you want to talk about when the time is right. Today's going to be one of those days where you got to hit them where they ain't. Pick your spots. I've got guests all over the place. So before a guest, in between guests, after a guest, whatever you can find, 216-901-0945. The first guest is Jack Windsor. He'll join us next on AM 1420.
Answer.
All right, we do continue now at 9:34. Like I said, we're loaded up today, so pick your spots. 216-901-0945, 888-281-1110. Either one of those will get you in. And we've got Dr. Everett Piper coming up after the top. We've got Daniel Street, an author who has written, I love this, by the way. Daniel Street, who's going to be joining us, has written four books. Here's what they're called. Fake News Exposed About Trump, Volume 1. Fake News Exposed About Trump, Volume 2. Fake News Exposed About Trump, Volume 3. And Fake News Exposed About Trump, Triple Volume. He has written, fourth one might be a compendium. But at any rate, yeah, he is just writing books about all of the bogus news coverage of Donald J. Trump. We're going to talk to him coming up at 10:35. And then at 11:10, again, Robert Kylo, Center for Christian Virtue, will join us to talk about this Pride Fest that they want to have on city property in Broadview Heights. Big, big pushback against that on Monday. So we'll talk to him coming up at 11:10. But right now, you know who this guy is. He is our good friend from the Ohio Press Network. He is also a radio host now down on the Salem station in Columbus, The Answer in Columbus. And he has been for the last 4 years now considered our state house correspondent. Nobody knows what's going on inside the halls in Columbus as well as Jack Windsor does. And who's that crowd of people there with him? That's Jack Windsor's Facebook fan club. That's what that is. And he brings them everywhere he goes. Hey, Jack, what's happening?
Hey, Bob. Thanks for having me. I apologize at the onset here. I'm a little sluggish today. We've been driving all around the state to get my dad into care. He had a health episode over the weekend, so running on fumes today. But nonetheless, I'm excited to be here and talk with you and the listeners.
Well, I certainly, as I mentioned to you yesterday, certainly say a prayer for your father and hope everything is going well. And thank you for making the time. You know, in spite of all of that stuff going on there. So Jack, I read your coverage on the Ohio Press Network website, which I want to remind people that they should subscribe to, theohiopressnetwork.com. A judge in Franklin County, Common Pleas Judge Michael Holbrook, has decided that the SAFE Act cannot go forward, that the ban on mutilation and castration, isn't it funny? How, you know, we call it what it is. It's a ban on chemical castration and drugging and mutilating children. They call it a ban on health care for needy trans kids. He says it cannot go on until litigation happens, until the entire outcome is litigated, I should say, in a court of law. What can you tell us, Jeff?
Well, you're absolutely right. I think the first thing I'll tell you is it's imperative to continue calling it what it is. It's not gender-affirming care. It's puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, and the cutting off of healthy body parts. But the ACLU, nonetheless, objected to House Bill 68, which, by the way, is two parts. It is the SAFE Act, which we just talked about, but it's also Save Women's Sports, so it would bar men from competing in women's sports in high school and in college. The judge issued a temporary restraining order for 2 weeks. Now, he gave himself the opportunity to extend that, you know, depending on if someone seeks the extension of it. But there are a couple of key points here that I think are really important to consider. Anytime that the court issues a temporary restraining order, there are, I guess, triggers that they have to, you know, flip and make sure that they're relevant and being followed, like the likelihood of success. For example, if this case didn't have a likelihood of success, the judge wouldn't issue a temporary restraining order. The immediate or irreparable damage that could be done, and then the third party or public impact. So, for example, there are two minors in question in this lawsuit brought in Franklin County by the ACLU. If the judge thought, well, those two are the ones that are going to be impacted, not necessarily the public at large, probably would not issue a TRO. But in the story that we published about this on the Ohio Press Network, Ohio judge stops law passed to keep men out of women's sports and protect minors, so on and so forth. You can download this 15-page opinion from the judge. Two things I will say that are critical. Number one, the ACLU argues that the law contains two laws, therefore it violates the state constitution and the single topic or single rule section of the Constitution. The judge said that there's a strong likelihood that the case will succeed just based on those merits. And so that is probably something concerning. But then when you get into the opinion, it's really disturbing to think about kind of where this judge is right now on issues like, does this cause an immediate harm to minors? And the judge basically cited what the ACLU said, which is, you know, you can't plan puberty. So we have to keep this health care open. And so that's what the judge said. And then when he talked about this third party or public impact, he actually quoted Governor Mike DeWine when he vetoed House Bill 68 and said, essentially, you know, we're asking parents to do something with something that matters most to them, which is their kids. And we can't underestimate how difficult this decision is. And that's the part that disturbed me, Bob. And I'll say this and then I'll shut up. But when you think about the judge citing Governor Mike DeWine, my issue is that Governor Mike DeWine has clearly been captured by the medical industrial complex, as we saw that during COVID. Instead of relying on science and medicine, the judge relies on a politician whose bank account has been fattened by the medical industrial complex. That's the part that's disturbing to me.
Well, I agree with a lot of that. I want to go back to one specific thing. That line, the judge said you can't plan puberty, and that's why they have to keep this open?
Yes.
So, in other words, because we don't know when puberty is going to happen, they ought to be able to give these kids, before they become pubescent, these blockers. What about the fact that that's exactly the point? You're not supposed to be blocking puberty. It's supposed to happen when it happens naturally, and you're not supposed to stop it with drugs all to advance some ridiculous, you know, social agenda, which is trying to create psychological delusions and disorders inside of kids' minds. How the hell is that even something a judge could say? You can't plan puberty, so we have to be able to block puberty at a moment's notice. What? I don't get it.
Yeah, there's a line there, right? And like, if there's a line and you go, well, which side of this argument is dangerous, the judge is essentially saying, well, we don't know when puberty's coming, and this is a safe way to help kids. That's the alarming part, Bob. I mean, the judge is essentially saying, well, we got to give these kids care, when there is mounting evidence showing that this battery of what they call care actually threatens the health, safety, and well-being of kids. So, you know, that is the other alarming part, that he seems to be on the side of this ideology that this care is, quote, gender affirming, when it's not. It increases the likelihood of suicide. It causes irreparable damage. And there are studies that show that a massive number massive percentage of kids who struggle with gender dysphoria or gender confusion actually change their minds later on when they grow up. So why in the hell are we letting them cut off healthy body parts and take drugs that are going to permanently alter them?
What do you know about this judge? Any history, any other controversial rulings, any, you know, left-wing biases? Because this is clearly he's siding with the ACLU, and I don't think that, you know, that the facts of the case are the reason why. Certainly not the facts of the impact of drugs, as you just pointed out, the chemical castration, and certainly prepping these kids for surgical mutilation. What do you know about him? Anything?
So I do know that in 2022, he actually ran in the Republican primary. And he was uncontested and then ran against Zach Gwynn, who was the Democrat. And he actually won that race, Bob, by like 300 votes or something like that, maybe less than 300 votes in a 360,000 vote election. So he won by a very slim margin. But when you look at his Ballotpedia page, which, by the way, Ballotpedia is a place I recommend everybody go if you want to find out about politicians or, you know, kind of their backgrounds. Essentially, he is undeclared in party, in essence, but he ran as a Republican. So, you know, he might have some Republican striping, but looking at his decision, it's pretty disturbing. I would recommend that folks read the story. It's a 15-page decision that we have embedded in the story, but I think 9 of those pages is really reciting the Ohio Revised Code that was changed with the passage of House Bill 68. And so there's really only about 6 pages of legal argument. I think it's very eye-opening if you take the time to read that opinion.
Yeah, and one other person I'll ask about on this is the Attorney General. Dave Yost wrote an article earlier this month, you know, arguing about why the state will indeed defend the SAFE Act against you know, the ACLU here. And what can you tell us about what Dave Yost had to say and what impact do you think he'll have in this whole thing?
You know, I think that he has a lot of insight that I don't, and he had a sense of I don't know, optimism. He said, this is just the first page of the book. We'll fight vigorously to defend this properly. And that, you know, this does protect children from irrevocable adult decisions. And I'm confident, he said, this law will be upheld. So, you know, my goal is to have him back on. But what he told me before was he thought, you know, there are two sides to this, Bob. The one side is there's like the legal construct, right? The ACLU is saying this is unconstitutional because it's two laws in one. This is unconstitutional because it goes against this idea of equal protection under the law. And Yost basically said, no, it doesn't. We don't allow kids to smoke. We don't allow them to drink. We don't allow them to sign, you know, binding contracts until they're adults. And that those things are not looked at as like violating equal protection. This is going to fall in that realm. The thing that I'm interested to find out is this single rule. You know, if it states unequivocally in the Constitution that you have to have like one law in a piece of legislation, then maybe that is going to be a significant issue. But then I ask questions in my mind like, well, then how do you justify an omnibus bill, right? Like, because omnibus bills get passed all the time. So I've got to get Dave Yost back on to talk about this.
Yeah, and so do I. We actually had him scheduled last week, I think when you did too, and our entire phone system went out, so we couldn't have him on that day. But but we'll get him back on. But I'm glad, because you talked to him, I figured you can give us a little bit of the lay of the land about where he's coming from in terms of opposing this this suit by the ACLU.
Bob, yeah. Bob, I got to say this. Do I have 30 seconds? Because I got to add this.
Yeah, okay. We got time.
Okay. The thing that I left out, again, I apologize, a little tired, it slipped my mind. But Dave Yost also said that they're going to be aggressive with this case. So they're not only going to argue the legal construct, they're actually going to put on trial, in essence, this whole idea that this is gender affirming, that this care works, that it's safe, that it's effective. And so that is the part that I genuinely hope gets brought to the forefront, because, again, there's mounting evidence. You only have to look at Sweden, who allowed this stuff to begin 30 years ago. They've slammed the brakes on it because they have longitudinal data that show this is not safe or good for kids. And so hopefully this all comes out in the wash.
Well, we will definitely be praying about that. I won't just cross my fingers. I'll make the sign, because we need to pray about this, because kids' health is in serious jeopardy here, and long-term health, more importantly. Jack, I want to pivot now. apparently the Biden ballot issue is going to be resolved. Matt Huffman said, according to this story in the Cleveland.com, that it's going to get done. Quote, I don't want to speak on behalf of the Democrat Party. I'm not a member, but we are certainly going to try to accommodate any result. He basically said that it will be an administrative fix or a legislative one. But he said even a lawsuit would be successful in light of the unanimous March decision by the Supreme Court that restored Donald Trump to the ballot in Colorado and Maine. I hate the comparison because no one was trying to block Joe Biden here in Ohio the way they tried to block Trump in Colorado and Maine. This was a simple Democrat Party error because they're too stupid to look and see what all 50 states and their and the territories require as far as certification to get on a ballot. And they scheduled their convention too late. This is a Biden problem, not a Republican blockage. But Matt Huffman said they're going to do everything they can to accommodate.
Well, first of all, and I'm sorry if this sounds arrogant, I'm going to gloat. The fact that I scooped Cleveland.com by like a week on this is just awesome. We had Matt Huffman on our show here in Columbus, and he talked about this very issue. And he was very adamant that this is a Democrat problem. But, Bob, you and I both know, and I think we've talked about this on air before, there's no nuance that the press will honor when it comes to holding Democrats or progressives accountable. The press is going to look at this, if he's kept off the ballot, and go, oh my gosh, the Republicans wanted Trump on the ballot, but look, they took him off the ballot in Ohio. Not getting to the fact that, oh, by the way, the Democrats missed the deadline. It's their fault. And oh, by the way, Trump didn't do anything wrong and shouldn't have been kept off the primary ballot. They'll never get into that. But what Huffman told me that really resonated was he said, look, I don't think it's going to take a law, frankly. He goes, but if it does, then it does. But there isn't a court that's going to allow this, essentially, that they're not going to allow a federal election this large to, you know, somehow be impacted by this type of administrative oops. And so he believes, like you said, the Supreme Court decision really is kind of the foundation that would allow Biden back on the ballot in Ohio. And I think he will be on the ballot. And I know that you don't agree with this. I say good. That way he gets beat. He gets beat fair and square. And then, you know, there's less kvetching because there's going
to
be kvetching.
Well, I want him to be on the ballot, too, Jack. Don't misunderstand. I'm with you. I want him to be on the ballot, and I want him to lose fair and square, and I believe he will. Ohio has been very, very clear in the last two elections how supportive of Trump they are. But I want him to be on the ballot by the Democrats fixing their mistake. They screwed it up. Change your convention. Find another city. Do a virtual convention. Something you can do on a, you know, without all of the infrastructure and logistics that would happen if you had to move it up in, you know, in that city or in another city. Do make them fix their own problem and get on the ballot. It's not something we should be trying to help. Like I said to you before, and I've talked about this to other folks, they would never in a billion years do this for any Republican, much less the current Republican, you know, nominee, Donald Trump. There's no way they would say, hey, let's make this easier for you so you can get your guy on the ballot. Are you kidding me? I'm tired of placating these people and treating them better than they would ever think about treating us.
No, your point is spot on. And it's kind of like arguing with a liberal on social media. Prove it to me. Show me the facts. Do this for me. And it's like, no, bro, do your own push-ups. I'm not doing your workout for you. But so your point is well taken. They do need to fix it. And by the way, my understanding, according to my conversation with Senate President Matt Huffman, is it could be as simple as them writing a letter to the Secretary of State and saying, hey, Joe Biden's our guy. Can you put him on the ballot? He goes, that would probably suffice in this instance. So, yeah, they should at least have the initiative and the wherewithal and, you know, the go-get-iveness to do that. I don't know if they will, though.
Yeah, that it's a great question. I'm just supremely frustrated. I was also supremely frustrated by several Ohio Republicans in Congress. I'm going to ask this of you, Jack. Max Miller, Max Miller, Dave Joyce, Balderson. There were five or six of the Ohio Republicans were among the 86. Mike Turner, yep, thank you, Seth. Mike Turner, of course, because he was the lead, you know, in the Intelligence Committee who opposed this. But they all opposed an amendment that was put forth a few days ago by Andy Biggs that would require a warrant before the government could start spying on you and me and any of our online information that they think might be, you know, involved in foreign entanglements. Jack, I mean, the Fourth Amendment is supposed to be protected by people who actually are constitutional. The Fourth Amendment is a part of the Constitution. How are our constitutional conservatives, 86 of them in the House of Representatives, Republicans, and a handful, five or six, I got into the total count there, but five or six of them from our state voting to say, ah, the hell with that. If the government wants to look at you and follow you and surveil you and track your spending, track your visits, track your online activity, they don't need a warrant to do that. That's just so ceremonial anyway.
Yeah, so two things on this. I talked to Congressman Warren Davidson about it. I'm sorely disappointed. And by the way, the amendment to require a warrant, it was tied 212 to 212, and a tie loses in the House. Here's the interesting part. Speaker Johnson, had he waited until this week, would have had enough Republicans back, because some were gone, that would have supported the measure. So the question is, why? Why didn't he wait? And then the second question is, whether it is something that is effectual or not, and I think that it is, why the hell would you not vote for it? Why would you essentially be a Republican and have to go home to your constituents and say, yeah, you know, your privacy matters, but in the event of some international potential terrorist being swept up in surveillance, if your email or your text messages are involved, yeah, you know, that just kind of happens. BS. I mean, the world that we live in now, if you can't stand up on that, like, that's it. That is a layup, Bob, to be able to say, hell no, you're going to get a warrant. You're not going to spy on our people. I'm sorely disappointed in Balderson, Dave Joyce, and, I mean, Turner's a joke. So that doesn't surprise me.
Yes, he is. Yeah, and he actually battled it out with Jim Jordan. I had Jordan on yesterday, and he was the number one, you know, supporter of this. I should say opponent of the amendment that would require the warrants. And I'm still trying to figure that out. I'm still trying to figure out Max Miller up here in Northeast Ohio as well. I have Max on from time to time on this program, and, you know, he always has good explanations for why he does what he does, and we think, okay, he's on board, he's conservative, and then he'll cast a vote like this. He cast a vote, so many crazy votes. I'm failing to see how in a one vote majority, which is all we have now because we have completely destroyed the small majority we had. It's down to a one vote majority now U.S. House, and every single vote matters. And we have Ohio representation that is siding with the Democrats. We talk about the trans Dems in the Ohio General Assembly and the Ohio House. I think the whole thing is spreading to the U.S. House as well. And I don't know what we're supposed to do about it.
Well, Bob, I can tell you the argument, regardless of what they say. Here's the foundation of it. Yeah, we'll get them next time. You know, we couldn't get everything, but we got a little. We'll get them next time. You know what never comes? Next time, which is why we are where we are. And you tell me the difference between Speaker Johnson and Nancy Pelosi. I don't see one.
I don't either. And you know what? I played this earlier. I'll play it for you. I played it during my top 9 and 9. This is Democratic Representative Adam Smith talking about Mike Johnson, who just folded. This time on the Ukraine funding. He's packaged four bills together to be individually introduced on the floor, which is the only way he could get a Ukraine measure on the floor, because conservatives are tired of spending good money after bad. And by the way, when he became speaker, he was opposed to any more Ukraine funding because we just cannot afford it. And we have more important issues that we have to deal with. And now suddenly, I don't know who got to him, but now he cannot get this to the floor fast enough. And here's what Adam Smith said about it.
Look, I am not under any illusion as a Democrat that I'm going to love the Republican Speaker of the House. All I ask is for someone that we can work with. And Mike Johnson, he's kept the government open. He allowed us to pass the appropriations bill, so that process would go through a normal process. And now he's allowed us to have a vote on this incredibly important supplemental. And I think that, you know, it shows that is someone we can work with.
Somebody we can work with. Absolutely. I don't understand the difference between Rand Paul said something similar. He said, what's the difference between Mike Johnson and the Democrats? I don't see it.
Bob, there's no solution for our wide open border. We're sending money to other countries to protect theirs, and we're not protecting ours. We have $34 trillion in debt, and this guy is spending about $1.5 to $2 trillion of deficit spending a year. There's no difference between Mike Johnson and Nancy Pelosi. He's a joke.
I completely agree with that. And yet they ran Kevin McCarthy out like he was the problem. I'll never understand that. Jack Windsor.
At least McCarthy could fundraise. Anyway.
Yes, he could. Sorry. Exactly right. Yes, he could. He was not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. And by the way, he actually put up a fight on all of those spending deadlines in order to keep the government funded. He fought. He was willing to shut it down. Johnson rolled over, I mean, like weeks before the deadlines. He's just so incredibly malleable. It's just it's an embarrassment. Jack Windsor, make sure to follow Jack and make sure that you are subscribing to TheOhioPressNetwork.com, TheOhioPressNetwork.com. Jack, thank you, my friend.
Thanks, Bob.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. It's 9:57. Dr. Everett Piper will join us after the top. Stay here. It's Always Right.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny. We'll preserve for our children this, the last best hope of man on earth, or we'll sentence them to take the last step into 1,000 years of darkness.
This is Always Right Radio on AM 1420, The Answer. Here's your host, Bob France.
All right, hour number two has commenced. It is 7 minutes past 10 o'clock on this Thursday, the 18th morning of the fourth month, year of our Lord 2024. Thanks to Jack Windsor. Good conversation, bad topics. Well, bad outcomes of those topics, which is, of course, why we're discussing it. And hopefully we'll get some changes and the courts will see the light. We'll come back to that in a bit. But since it is a Thursday, it's time to continue our foray into the culture wars. And we've got to follow somebody. Why not follow a real leader like Dr. Everett Piper? Dr. Piper is a past university president. He is a current columnist with The Washington Times, writes twice weekly for that publication. He's a best-selling author. He is also a podcast radio host called The Rebellion. You should get that wherever you get your podcasts. And he happens to be a county commissioner in Osage County, Oklahoma. Dr. Piper, welcome back.
Good to be on your show, Bob.
Good to talk to you as always. We've got four things we're going to try to plow through here. Two of them you know about because you wrote them, and two of them you don't. And I want to get your thoughts on those as well. So let's just dive right into the heart of Donald Trump and the immutable truth. Really, really interesting piece as President Trump is continuing to make a lot of people scratch their heads as he kind of hints at some pivots on his stance on abortion. And you wrote an entire piece about this, and let's just let you summarize.
Okay, first I want to say what I said before on your show, that I am a proponent. I advocate for incrementalism. I think if I can save more babies rather than less, then I will take that position and move the ball down the field. I can't throw a Hail Mary pass every time I've got the ball on offense. So I want to make that clear. So if I can save 99 out of 100 babies or even 80 out of 100 babies as opposed to losing them all, I'm going to go for the incremental gain because I think that's a moral good. That's called triage. We've talked about that before on your show.
Absolutely.
The old MASH unit. Mobile Army Surgical Hospital, the show where we watched the helicopters come in and they had to make decisions as to who they could save, and they knew they would lose some. That said, I do not agree with Donald Trump's capitulation. I'm not going to call it a pivot. I'm going to call it a capitulation on the abortion issue. And here's the reason. Donald Trump's entire argument a week ago Monday was predicated and grounded in his position that he voiced three times. He said it three times in his quick Truth Social video that he posted. Follow your heart. Follow your heart. Follow your heart. Now, what's wrong with that? Well, the prophet Jeremiah tells us the heart is deceitful above all things. And Samuel, 500 years before Jeremiah, in the book of Judges, tells us that in those days there was no king and everybody did what was what? Right in their own eyes. Both of these prophets, Samuel and Jeremiah, are telling us that it's very dangerous to do what is right in your own eyes. It's very dangerous to follow your heart because the human heart is deceptive. G.K. Chesterton told us that the only empirical proof of Christian theology is original sin. Now, is that hyperbole on Chesterton's part? I don't know. But it's a good point because if you want to prove Christian theology, just turn on the daily news, and you'll see proof of the original sin. The human being is a broken individual. Yes, we're made in the image of God. Yes, we do have his thumbprint on our heart, mind, and soul, and we understand moral culpability. But we also understand that we need to be transformed and redeemed, and that if we follow our broken heart, we're going to lead everyone off the cliff in a broken world. So I do not agree with Donald Trump's contention that we should follow our heart when it comes to abortion, when it comes to murder, when it comes to sexual morality, when it comes to any moral decision. You don't follow your heart. You follow the empirical proof of God's revelation, those self-evident truths that are endowed to us by our Creator that the Founding Fathers referred to, and that's a biblical worldview where you've got a compass, you've got a measuring rod, a thousand times I've said it on your show, C.S. Lewis, you have to have a measuring rod outside of those things being measured, or you can do no measuring. You have to have a measuring rod outside of yourself if you're going to measure what's good and just and right and true. Moral relativism is grounded in following yourself. Moral realism is grounded in following something outside of yourself, bigger and better and unchangeable. It's called God's revelation, natural law. In Christian terms, it's called Scripture. It's called the Bible.
Okay, allow me to try to push back a little bit, not on the content of what you're saying, but the intent. A lot of people believe that what we have seen over the course of the, you know, the months since when a little over a year, I guess now, since Roe versus Wade, I don't remember the date of it, was repealed and the decision on Dobbs, that abortion has become a losing battle for us when it comes to elections. And I can sit here and say in a deeply red state of Ohio, at least based on results of elections for our legislature and for all of our statewide offices and Donald Trump winning here twice by 8 points, I feel like we're a pretty consistently red state now. And yet we got hammered on the abortion issue on the amendment by 13.5 points, I think it was, last November. Some are saying we are losing elections because of our hard stance on abortion. What if Donald Trump here is just trying to say, I have to show a little bit of flexibility, I have to show a little bit of, you know, malleability, if you will, just so that we can get some moderates to vote for us who see us as hardliners and they're never going to vote for us now. We can do more good when we're in office than we can if we're not in office, so we might have to say some things that we don't necessarily believe in.
And that's an argument for Woody Hayes football, and I agree with that. Pound the ball up the middle, gain 3 or 4 yards, lose one, and then pound it up the middle again. Gain 3 yards, lose one. That isn't bad football. But if that's your strategy, then admit it. Don't buy into this postmodern argument of following your heart. Do what you feel is right.
But you can't really admit it, though, Doctor. Because you'd be saying, I don't really believe all of this stuff I'm saying right now. I'm just saying it to win elections. Once I begin into office, I'm going to be full 100% pro-life and no exceptions and, you know, national abortion ban and so forth. I mean, you kind of have to let them believe that you are, you know, considering these things from their point of view.
Well, let me give you an alternative. Okay. Why not just say, I, as the President of the United States, am going to push for pro-life legislation that saves every baby after the detection of a heartbeat, with the exception of the life of the mother. Why not say that? And then just shut up.
Well, I mean, again, and I'm arguing a position I don't necessarily believe in here. But to answer your question, the answer would be because that wouldn't be enough. That would not be enough to win the abortion battle in the minds of the people. Again, there are sadly, and I don't know what to make of this, but there are sadly a growing number of Republicans who are concerned certainly about abortion, but who are a lot more flexible about it than they would have been 20 years ago. I'm not sure that Roe versus Wade being overturned has done us a huge favor here, because it's now allowed, as Trump said, to be decided state by state. And there are a lot of people, a lot of Republicans, even a lot of red states who are a little bit more flexible about it than they've ever been before.
Well, I agree with you on that, and I think they were flexible on it before. They just hid behind the fact that they could fight against the big, bad demon of Roe v. Wade, flail against it, recognizing that, at least in their opinion, it wasn't going to go away, and therefore they'd never have to worry about the consequences if it did. Well, here we are. We see the consequences of Roe v. Wade. And by the way, I don't agree. I don't think murder is something that you should decide on a state-by-state basis. I'm not too sure I agree with radical federalism when it comes to murder. That's an interesting debate that we've fallen into.
I don't either, Dr. Piper. But again, going back to what you said at the very beginning about this, you know, I'd rather save more babies than less. If I have to say some things about what you and I would absolutely refer to as murder, not everybody sees it this way, hence the debate on abortion. But what, you know, if we have to say some things about that and not call it murder for the purpose of getting into office and then doing more good, then maybe you have to say what you have to say. That's all I'm suggesting that might be what his intent is here. Maybe President Trump is still the, you know, the pro-lifer who spoke to the March for Life crowd a few years ago when he was president, the first sitting president to ever do that. Maybe he has the same mindset, but he's got to know that we're losing the election wars based on the abortion battle, and we have to say something different in order to try to win those.
Okay, one last word. I know we need to move on.
Yes.
Maybe. The key word there is maybe. However, before he made his speech, he was critical of Ron DeSantis' heartbeat bill in Florida, said he thought it was too extreme. He's been equally candid, if you will, about Arizona's laws. They're too extreme. And then he comes out and he posts this thing on Truth Social. So does he really believe that every human being from conception on until natural completion, i.e. natural death, should be protected by the federal government, and that any compromise of that is murder? Does he really believe that? I'm not so sure. Is it a pragmatic move? Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. It's a pragmatic move. But here's the question. Will it work? Has he lost more pro-lifers than he's gained in the middle? That's a very interesting question.
I certainly hope not. I certainly hope not, because then we are going to be left with full-on pro-choicers who are going to be running this country for a very long time. Okay, let's move on. You mentioned, actually, postmodernism in your commentary there, and that brings us to Ask Dr. E this week. I've heard a couple of pastors talk about our present culture wars being the inevitable result of a postmodern worldview. I'm still not sure I understand what this means. Could you please explain again what postmodernity is and why it matters to the average citizen? Signed, Want to Learn More, from Cincinnati, Ohio. You've given us a few classes on pre-modernity, modernity, and post-modernity on this program before, but how did you answer Cincinnati?
Well, basically, it's a review of what we've talked about on your show. If you want, and I'm not the only one who says this, we've got other academics who have argued that we could, in a general way, break human history into three categories: pre-modern, modern, and post-modern. In pre-modernity, the pre-modern era, truth was a revelation. Truth was given by the gods, or by God. In the case of Judaism, it was given by God, Yahweh. In the case of paganism, it was given by the gods, the Greek gods, Zeus, Apollo, Abacus, etc. But truth was a revelation from outside. Truth was bigger than the individual in pre-modernity. Now along during the Enlightenment, let's just say the 1600s or thereabout, we have modernity. So rather than in the pre-modern era, where everything was supernatural, we have the modern era, where everything is simply natural. In other words, if you can't taste it, touch it, see it, feel it, then it just isn't so. So pre-modernity is the supernatural revelation of truth. Modernity is the simply natural revelation of truth, or not even revelation, the acknowledgement of truth, that you've got to be able to touch it and see it, or it's not so. Now, where are we today? If pre-modernity was supernatural and modernity was simply natural, post-modernity comes along in the early 1900s, and it is Superman. What the Nazis called the Übermensch. It's we define truth. The individual is the yardstick of himself. It goes back to Donald Trump. Follow your heart. Follow your feelings. Feelings trump facts. It's this radical Gnosticism of knowing better than even science what your body is or what it isn't. And, oh, my goodness, to even think that there's a God that reveals self-evident truths to us and that we ground our government in those self-evident truths, well, we know by virtue of a recent, was it CNN or was it MSNBC? I can't remember that woman that said that these radical Christian nationalists actually think that our government is grounded in self-evident truths that are endowed to us by God. That is a radical postmodern deconstruction of this revelation, the self-evidence, this natural understanding that we have in our heart, mind, and soul that things like slavery are wrong, the Holocaust was a bad thing, rape should be reviled, don't you think? And murdering babies ought to be off the table. That postmodern worldview of justifying those things is where we are today. So pre-modernity, supernatural, Modernity, simply natural. Post-modernity, Superman, the Ubermensch.
You know, I wasn't going to do this, but and I probably still can't, I guess, because you brought up truth, and it's such an important thing. You know, what is real truth and, you know, objective truth versus subjective versions of truth. The new chief at NPR, and I'm sure you've been following that nonsense. Yeah, there was a clip that's been it's gone viral in the last 24 hours, actually, as she talks about the truth being a distraction. Vivek Ramaswamy quoted her in a tweet yesterday, and it's a 2.5 minute clip, so that's why I don't have time to play it for you. But the summary from Vivek says, the new CEO said, our reverence for the truth might be a distraction getting in the way of finding common ground and getting things done. This gets to, end quote, this gets to the heart of the cultural divide in the modern West, whether you believe truth is a priority or a hindrance. And I'll tell you, I mean, I don't know, I'm not an expert on postmodernity, but I'll tell you, based on everything that you have talked about here, this is a prime example of postmodernism and the death of truth.
It's the poster child. What she said is the poster child of everything we've talked about on this show this morning. It's the poster child of follow your heart. And what did Jeremiah say? No, the heart is deceptive. It's deceitful above all things. What did Samuel say? In those days, everyone did what was right in their own eyes. Everything was subjective. Everything was relative. And chaos, anarchy ensued. And that's where we are today. And unfortunately, even Republicans are parroting this nonsense, this pablum. You go back to Justice Kennedy and his ruling in Texas versus whoever on that abortion case down there, where it was a seminal quote of his where he said, at the heart of human liberty is the right of every individual to define for themselves, what they believe they are and what they believe their existence should be.
Dr. Piper, great analysis. Let's move on, and I want to get a couple of other stories in here with you. I just posted this on my Facebook page yesterday, and because I just became aware of it. It's a full letter, nothing redacted, even there's a phone number on it. This is an elementary school in Detroit, Michigan, Chavy Road Elementary School, dated 4/11/2024. Dear parents and guardians, we would like to inform you of a lesson that will be taught in your child's classroom. The lesson's goals are to help students share and explore pronouns through discussion and literature, to embrace differences and promote acceptance. During the lesson, students will listen to the book They, She, He, Me, Free to Be, and participate in discussion about the book. Practice using the pronouns they and them, and what to do if we make a mistake with pronouns, and learn that it's not okay to change someone's pronouns on purpose, and to always try to use the pronouns that people want to be called. I'll stop there because you're probably fuming already, but it's signed by the principal and the superintendent of schools. And I just think it would be a shame if people actually called the phone number on that letterhead there and gave their opinions about what is being done to these kids. But what's your thought?
Forgive me. I'm standing outside. My dogs are barking at the neighbor. Forgive me for that. Same story. Everything we're talking about today, Bob, is the same thing. Okay, so pronouns are not subjective, especially singular and plural pronouns. I mean, it was just 5 minutes ago in human history where if somebody used a plural pronoun to refer to themselves, we would have suggested that they were schizophrenic and maybe like Sybil, Sally Field's character that she played, multiple personality disorder, because it's crazy to refer to one person in the singular. Excuse me, in the plural. It's crazy to refer to one person, yourself, in the plural. But now we deny reality. We deny the obvious. We deny the fact of plural versus singular. And now we start telling people in the name of inclusion and tolerance that we will not tolerate you if you are so exclusive as to not include these people that are delusional within our definition of reality. It's a self-refuting claim. I said this over and over on your show. We saw off the branch upon which we sit when we embrace this postmodern nonsense. Because while we say that you must use plural pronouns because they're inclusive, you're excluding those who say, wait a second, I think there's a difference between the singular and the plural. Well, we won't tolerate you for saying that in the name of tolerance. It's self-refuting. They're turning. They point one finger of accusation out at you. They don't realize they've got three fingers pointing back at themselves.
That's very well said. And Dr. Piper, I'm going to squeeze the last one in here, and it's going to be under the wire. We've only got a couple of minutes, but it's staying in the schools, and it's staying what is being done to our children. A group of students in Utah walked out of their school after apparently school administrators and faculty allowed furries to attack them without repercussions. Some of the students, I'm not going to play the audio because it's just a little bit clustered, but here are some of the things that were said. Do your parents, this is a reporter asking the students who are outside, do your parents know you're out here? Students, yes. Student one, they fight us and we just kick them. We get in trouble. They're attacking us. They're attacking us. They bite us. They scratch us. They run around on all fours and they pounce on people and nothing is being done about it. One reporter said, why are they spraying you with Febreze? Student said, because they're jerks and they're putting litter boxes in the girls' bathrooms. It's falling apart, Dr. Piper. This is happening in an American school. The kids are allowed to act like literal animals, not the euphemistic term, you're an animal, but they're acting that way, and the other kids have had enough, and they are leaving the schools. Two minutes for you here.
This is in the category that we've talked about before. That'll never happen. Well, yeah, it will.
Yeah, it is.
Okay. We've warned, you've warned, and I've warned for months, if not years, that once you open Pandora's box up of these subjective identity claims that you're LGBTQIA, that you're trans, that a male is a female and a female is a male, you can't stop this train. It's a train wreck with no end. Because if you can subjectively claim that you're female when you're not, then why can't you subjectively claim that you're a goat if you're not? Oh, that'll never happen, people said years ago when I warned of this on a talk show in Tulsa. That'll never happen. Piper, you're being hyperbolic. That's extreme. No, it will happen because people will take this argument of subjective identity to its logical end. And if you can claim to be a woman and you're not, then you can claim to be a cat if you're not. You can claim to be a goat. There's a guy in the Northeast in New England who is claiming to be a goat. He's had prostheses made for his front, legs, his arms, so that he can walk around on all four fours out in the field and eat grass.
You're being serious on that one. I thought you were talking about Tom Brady. That's a guy in the Northeast who can claim to be a goat, and I think we'd all be okay with that. But that is insane. I didn't know about the prosthesis story there. I'll have to dig into that one myself. That one's even worse than what I'm discussing right now. Dr. Piper, thank you. Always appreciate your time and your analysis. We will talk to you again soon. Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, that's Dr. Everett Piper. It's 10:28. He said there's a guy up in the Northeast pretending to be a goat, and I thought it's got to be Brady. All right, we're going to take a timeout. It's Always Right Radio on AM 1420.
The Answer.
Onward we roll. I told you we were busy today, and we are. Thanks to Dr. Everett Piper. Thanks to Jack Windsor. And a little bit later on, we're going to be talking with Robert Kylo from the Center for Christian Virtue. About what's going on in Broadview Heights. If you didn't see that, I played a clip for you from Fox 8 local story on Broadview Heights. They're planning a Pride Fest thing on city property. And there was a pushback at the city council meeting on Monday, and Robert Kylo was a part of that pushback. So he's going to join us to talk about that coming up at about 11:10 this morning. And if you missed anything with Dr. Everett Piper, you're going to want to hear it, especially that last story about the furries. It's unbelievable what they're doing and what they're subjecting our kids to and what they are trying to normalize in an attempt to bring deviant lifestyles bring kids into these deviant lifestyles. It's unbelievable. But if you missed any of that, it will be replayed and available for you after about an hour after the show at whkradio.com, whkradio.com. All right, I want to pivot now back to national politics and specifically the presidential election. We all know what they are trying to do to Donald Trump, and it's not new. Well, the lawfare part of this is new, I suppose. But the targeting of Donald Trump with lies and with fake news is something that we have become accustomed to since 2015, really. Literally, the year before his actual victory, when he announced his presidential candidacy, the targets have been on him. And somebody has been following it. Somebody has been tracking it. Somebody has been reporting on it. Somebody has been writing about it. That somebody is Daniel Street. Daniel Street is an Amazon best-selling author. He's also an attorney. He's got 20 years of experience plus handling civil litigation in state and federal court in Louisiana. And he has written three books about Donald Trump. Fake News Exposed About Trump, Volume 1, Fake News Exposed About Trump, Volume 2, and Fake News Exposed About Trump, Volume 3. Somebody wants you to know what the truth is about what they are doing to President Trump, and Daniel Street joins us now on AM 1420, The Answer. Daniel, good morning. It's good to have you. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you on. So, you didn't go with creativity when you came to each subsequent volume. You just went with what works, right? Fake News Exposed about Donald Trump. Why not? Tell us how you got started with this, Daniel.
Well, you know, I've been a Republican. I registered to vote Republican when I was 18 years old in 1989, which was something of a modest act of defiance in Louisiana back at that time. And so I knew I was idolized President Reagan growing up, and so I knew the media was unfair to President Reagan. I knew the media was unfair to Republicans. But when Donald Trump came down the escalator at Trump Tower in 2015, the media just went into an absolute frenzy spreading misinformation about anything having to do with Donald Trump, and the GOP establishment piled on. So I started paying close attention, just keeping tabs on all the misinformation, and eventually had so much of it, I said, you know, somebody needs to write a book about this, and so I decided to do it. And ultimately, I've had enough material to write three books, and to be honest with you, I could write three more if I just spent the time to do it. There's that many lies, misinformation, and propaganda about Donald Trump.
Yeah, you could probably write two or three more volumes just on the lawfare that he's going through right now, the one that's going on in Manhattan, and, of course, everything that is still to come in D.C. And in Florida and so forth. So let's get into just a little bit about how much it was stepped up under Donald Trump, because what you said is important. They've been lying about Republican presidents. The media has been left-wing. The bias has been laid bare, I think, more recently, but it's always been there for a very, very long time. I thought what they did to George W. Bush was worse than anything I had ever seen, and I think it was, even worse than the way they treated Reagan, quite honestly. But that pales in comparison to what they've Donald Trump. What is it about this guy, do you think, that, as you say, when he came down that escalator in 2015, just changed the game for all of them, those who were already biased and already, you know, had the knives out for Republicans? It just, they ratcheted up to a level never seen before with this guy.
Yeah, my theory about that's really pretty simple. I think that if you look at a lot of what Trump did during his campaign and what he said he was going to do during his campaign, and then what he set out to do as president, was really to change the paradigm of how or things are or should be done in Washington and to upset the apple cart. And for decades, the people of this country have been taken advantage of. We've been taken advantage of in our foreign policy, our economic policy, our trade policy. And President Trump came in and said, I'm going to change that, or as a candidate, said he would change it, and actually set about to do it as when he became president. And so anytime that happens, the people who are in charge, the people who have their thumb on the trigger, I mean, their finger on the trigger, their thumb on the switch, they go bananas. And so I believe that's what happened, is that President Trump threatened the existing order and the way things have been done and the livelihoods and profit and revenue streams of some very, very powerful, you know, multinational, transnational corporations and things like that. And, you know, the media just, it was all hands on deck to try to stop President Trump from actually accomplishing anything. So that's what I think happened.
We are talking with Daniel Street. He is an author and he's a lawyer. His books are Fake News Exposed About Trump's Volume 1, 2, and 3. He's got a Substack, which you can subscribe to and follow as well, DanielRStreet.com, and you can follow along there. So, Daniel, tell me how much you think this plays into it. I've been pondering this myself more recently. I feel like they came for him as hard as they did also because they lost one of their own. This is a guy who spent his entire adult public life as a very, very, I won't say radical, but a very, very committed progressive Democrat. This is a guy who was pro-choice. He did interviews in which he talked about how it should be up to the mother until, you know, all the way up. Somebody asked him in the third trimester, too, and he said, well, yeah, if you got to be pro-choice, you got to be pro-choice all the way. He had Oprah Winfrey begging him to run for president, of course, noted leftist there. And I feel like okay, you know, he was their guy. You know, Jesse Jackson loved him. Al Sharpton loved him. He was their guy, and they wanted him to run, and finally said, okay, I'm going to do it, but as a Republican. And I think that just flipped them on their ears. They're like, what? What are you going to do? And then he started speaking pro-life messaging and so forth. I feel like when they lost one of their own, who was one of their popular heroes, I think that just changed the game for them.
Well, that's certainly true with respect to quite a few people who have been vociferously attacking President Trump. I think that, or even candidate Trump, you know, at the end of the day, a lot of leftists in particular are people that they just can't tolerate disagreement. And so anyone that doesn't agree with him, anyone that doesn't toe the line they toe, is evil, is dishonest, is wrong. And you think when you have someone that was kind of part of their fold, so to speak, although I don't think President Trump was, you know, certainly not from an economic perspective, was never a leftist, you know. But whenever he came out as a conservative Republican, now these people, they view that as evil. I mean, it's that simple. That's why whenever Tom Cotton, who's a sitting United States senator from the state of Arkansas, was offered the opportunity or allowed to publish an op-ed in the New York Times, the staff writers in the New York Times went bananas and got the editorial page editor fired. These people are so radical that even allowing a Republican U.S. senator a forum was unacceptable. You know, so imagine those people, if you're friends with them, and they feel like you turned on them. So it's just going to be worse.
Exactly.
So you're probably right about that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you're right, they cannot tolerate dissent. And that's why rather than defeat it, you know, they just silence it. They want to quash it before it ever gets any, you know, any breath or any life. We're talking to Daniel R. Street. He's an author. His books are Fake News Exposed About Trump. And again, he's got a Substack. Just look for DanielRStreet.substack.com, and you can follow some of his work there. Let's talk about some of the fake news that you're talking about. I mean, I'm just looking at one of the promo pages. Daniel, no, the protests at the U.S. Capitol on January 6th were not an armed insurrection. No, the president did not incite any riots on January 6th, 2021. Is that the number one source of fake news that you would see, say, in the 4 years of his presidency and in the 3.5 years since then? Is January 6th number one?
You know, I actually believe the what I call the Charlottesville Nazis are very fine people hoax is the number one piece of fake news. In my investigation, in my research, that has been repeated, published, promoted, and spread around the world more than any other individual lie about President Trump. But January 6th is real. It's a close second.
Charlottesville was devastating. You're right. And the fact that this is, what, 4 years ago now, or however long it's been, and Joe Biden is still repeating the lie. He still says it on campaign stops and in little small gatherings, and everybody really has big campaign events, but he'll still say it. You know, that Donald Trump said there were very fine people who were neo-Nazis. He never, ever said that. In fact, he very specifically and pointedly condemned them. So I can see why you say that would be number one. And I guess I would also ask you, where do you rank, Daniel, the original fake news about Donald Trump, and that is that he was colluding with the Russians to beat Hillary Clinton?
Well, you know, the thing about Russia collusion Russia collusion and January 6th are similar in one respect, and that is that's both of those issues involve a host of stories and a host of different media outlets and misinformation on a scale that ran for years. You know, so the thing about the Russia collusion, though, is Russia collusion ensnared so many other people. For instance, you know, all the misinformation about Carter Page is a good illustration of it, if you remember. Then you had the Paul Manafort and the Trump Tower episode, if you remember that. So it was this ongoing narrative that played out over a period of years. And in that respect, you know, January 6th is the only thing that could compete with Russia collusion on just the sheer volume of different stories and mass and misinformation. But I will tell you what I believe, and this only obviously it involves President Trump, but I believe the American people have been fed more misinformation about any other single event in history is COVID.
Advance that, Daniel, because that's a very, very sticky wicket when it comes to President Trump. Because President Trump, sure, you know, being the champion of Operation Warp Speed and, you know, the guy who was in charge when all of this went down, you know, he has taken a lot of heat from both sides of that issue. I feel like, as a matter of fact, President Trump, you know, ought to maybe, you know, walk away from some of that now. He continues to be very proud, says he saved 100 million people by pushing Operation Warp Speed, and there's a lot more evidence that more damage was done by those shots than not. So that's a sticky subject here when you talk about how he handled COVID.
Well, I agree with you, and I will tell you, I've characterized it in one of my books as, with regard to Operation Warp Speed, as a colossal blunder of historic proportions. So, the point about that is that virtually everything the American people were told, in fact, virtually everything that people all over the world were told about COVID, about the lethality of COVID, about its ability to spread and the transmissibility, about the vaccines, about alternative remedies, everything was misinformation, and in many cases remains misinformation now. I don't believe that Donald Trump was responsible for most of that. In fact, he is been the brunt of a lot of misinformation, like the President Trump said to drink bleach. That wasn't true.
Yeah.
President Trump said to inject yourself with a fish tank cleaner as a treatment for COVID. That was complete, utter nonsense. And so he's been a victim of it. He does, as you pointed out, play a role with respect to Operation Warp Speed. And I think that what the medical establishment in this country, if they started telling the truth today, would need 30 years to recover their lost credibility for pushing the COVID vaccines as safe and effective. They weren't safe and they weren't effective, and they still won't let go of that. And that's where I really think that President Trump has made a mistake on that, because it just lacks credibility for anybody to say anything else other than the COVID vaccines were dangerous biological agents that didn't work. That's the truth. And it's high time that anybody in a position of responsibility admits that.
Yeah, I think that's well said. And you're exactly right about safe and effective. That is some of the biggest misinformation, the biggest lies whatsoever that have ever been told, is that these shots were safe and effective, because they were neither. Daniel, yep. Arstreet is our guest. He is an author and he is a lawyer, and he's got a Substack you should check out. It's danielarstreet.substack.com. His books, best-selling Amazon books, Fake News Exposed About Trump. Let's talk about something current now. And I don't know if you're literally are planning another book on this or not, but what they are saying about him in all of these cases, what they have said about him in that civil trial being advanced by Letitia James, the attorney general, the idea that somehow, some way, he overvalued his properties and therefore took advantage of the city and the state of New York as if somehow people were harmed. There were no victims there. What they're doing to him with this hush money trial, what they're doing to him with the documents, classified documents, thing after Robert Hur, the special investigator hired by Merrick Garland, found that Joe Biden did way, way, way worse when it comes to classified documents. But he's too old and infirm to prosecute, so we're going to let it go. But we're going to try to lock Donald Trump in jail for doing this. I feel like it's not getting better, it's getting worse.
Well, it is, and I can tell you that I've spent the last, a little over a year now, focusing on the lawfare directed at President Trump. And, you know, I still write about fake news, obviously, and there's a lot of fake news wrapped up in the lawfare against President Trump. But what is being waged against President Trump, both in with respect to the E. Jean Carroll case, with Letitia James as the attorney general in New York, her civil fine case, the Manhattan case, they're selecting the jury right now,
mm-hmm.
and the Georgia RICO case, the Florida documents case, and the D.C. district case, is unprecedented lawfare in the history of this country. In each and every one of those cases, there are not what we call novel legal theories being pursued against President Trump, and they're issues of first impression. And what I mean by that is there are issues that no court has ever ruled on, ever, involved in every one of those cases, because what they're doing is stretching the law and the facts and twisting and massaging it to where it's all hardly even recognizable in order to bring these claims and these prosecutions against President Trump. It's just like the effort to keep him off the ballot. That was utterly ludicrous. And finally, the Supreme Court put an end to it. Zip. It's dead. But you can see that people and pundits went all across the country for over a year talking about how that was going to get him. And so the important point for people to remember is all this is being done because the Democrats are afraid they can't win the election in November.
No question about it.
Because there's no other explanation for it. So I just hope that people need to get good information and see through all the propaganda to understand that President Trump has not victimized anyone. He is the victim.
Yeah, Dan, we're talking to Daniel R. Street. Daniel, the reason I kind of asked you the first question of our chat, which is January 6th the biggest, and you said, no, Charlottesville is, I'd probably disagree with you slightly, only because this is the one that is still enduring. This is the one that is still going on. The word insurrection has become the accepted language of the media. It has become the accepted language of political punditry. When people talk about January 6th, they say insurrection as if it's just it's a fact. It's been accepted. It's been proven. It was an insurrection. They use it just so casually as if that's what happened, and it wasn't. We know what it was. We know what it wasn't. It was not an insurrection, armed or otherwise, but they do that. And you're still writing about it, too. I'm looking at your Substack right now. Your most recent entry is Cassidy Hutchinson and the January 6th Committee Hatchet Job Part 2. Can you give me a summary of that?
Oh, sure. Yeah. So, the January 6th Committee was really unprecedented. Everything about the attacks on President Trump are unprecedented with respect to history. So you have the committee that was really all Democrats and never Trumpers because Nancy Pelosi refused to allow the Republican ranking member at that time to decide what Republicans would serve on the committee. So there were no actual Republicans, real Republicans. There was Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger who volunteered, and they got censored by the Republican Party for participating. So what you had was really a made-for-TV propaganda campaign using the subpoena power and the oversight power of Congress to terrorize and harass and intimidate people associated with President Trump, basically. And so they got this Cassidy Hutchinson to come up. And if you remember, she's the one who said that President Trump had, when he found out that his security detail was not taking him to the Capitol on January 6th, after he gave his speech at the Ellipse, that he attacked one of the Secret Service members and tried to grab the steering wheel of the
beast.
Presidential. She said it was the beast, but actually he was in an SUV. But anyway, the beast is a limo.
Right. So, correct. Thank you.
Yeah. So, yeah. And no, but you're right. That's what she said. She was just wrong. But the reality is none of that happened. And we know that none of that happened because the Secret Service members and President Trump's chief deputy of operations, who was there, said it didn't happen. But so all of this TV production was based on Cassidy Hutchinson. And what Cassidy Hutchinson repeated, supposedly, was what someone told her that someone else said about what supposedly happened. So it was hearsay within hearsay within hearsay, and she only mentioned it to him after her fourth interview. So it was just really cut from the whole cloth and ridiculous balderdash that was used to smear President Trump. And the fact that we have media who are really granting in-kind campaign contributions to the Democrat Party just parroting this garbage instead of using critical thought to isolate and identify it and break it down. That led to a lot of people getting just pummeled with misinformation. And the January 6th committee that's literally all they did was spread misinformation.
100%. And they did so, and the news media willingly helped them do that. For crying out loud, they put some of the last ones on prime time with an award-winning producer producing the entire thing as if this was not supposed to be some sort of propaganda machine. Daniel R. Street, his books are called Fake News Exposed About Trumps, volumes 1, 2, and 3. And then you've got a combined volume as well. You can probably get started on another one. I mean, I'm just looking. Just in the last couple of months, new hoaxes. You know, we've talked about the insurrection hoax, the Russian collusion hoax, the COVID hoax, everything that we've discussed. And then the bloodbath hoax, you wrote about that in your Substack.
Yeah.
You could add to that animals hoax because he called the killer of Lake and Riley an animal. So now that means he called all illegal aliens animals. I mean, every single thing he does and says, they take out of context, they twist to try to make him look like he's Hitler or worse than Hitler. So I'm so glad you're writing these exposés. Keep up that great work. If you do put another one out, please let me know, because I'd love to get a copy of that one. And thank you very much for the time.
Hey, thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Daniel R. Street. The book's, again, called Fake News Exposed About Trump. You should check those out. We'll take a time out. Top of the hour. After the news, we're going to talk to Robert Kylo, Center for Christian Virtue. He and some good folks in Broadview Heights are pushing back against some very, very dangerous stuff. I'll let him tell you that story next on Always Right.
This hour of Always Right Radio is brought to you by The Floor King and KeepingMedicareSimple.com.
You and I know and do not believe that life is so dear and peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. If nothing in life is worth dying for, when did this begin? Just in the face of this enemy? Or should Moses have told the children of Israel to live in slavery under the Pharaohs? Should Christ have refused the cross? Should the patriots at Concord Bridge have thrown down their guns and refused to fire the shot heard round the world? The martyrs of history were not fools. And our honored dead, who gave their lives to stop the advance of the Nazis, didn't die in vain. Where then is the road to peace? Well, it's a simple answer after all. You and I have the courage to say to our enemies, there is a price we will not pay. There is a point beyond which they must not advance.
This is Always Right Radio with Bob France on AM 1420, The Answer.
Alrighty then. Hour number three has commenced 7 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock on this Thursday, the 18th morning of the fourth month, the year of our Lord, 2024. Great conversations with a lot of good folks this morning. Jack Windsor teed us off in the 9 o'clock hour on what's going on in Columbus with respect to, and all over the state, quite frankly, with the Franklin County judge issuing a temporary injunction against the implementation of the SAFE Act and the Protecting and Saving Women Sports Act while the matter is litigated because of a lawsuit by the ACLU. So we had that with Jack. We had Dr. Everett Piper covering a lot of the culture war issues that we always do on Thursdays. We just had Daniel R. Street, the author of those books on the lies about President Trump. And now, speaking of lies, we're going to get... How many genders are there, you ask, according to the radical left that is trying to normalize these behaviors and normalize mental disturbances, disorders, psychological conditions, trying to groom children into adopting one of them? Exactly how many genders are there? If you said unlimited, you are correct. How do we know? Because they're discovering new genders of human beings all of the time. Don't believe me? Listen.
Did you know, however, there is a gender identity that is linked to the seasons? This is called gender season. And this is a gender identity I've only just learned about. It's a micro-identity. It's not an identity that I have ever heard discussed before. It's a new one for me. Gender season is an individual who explores their gender identity in relation to a season or all the seasons. So this might be somebody whose gender expression and identity is linked to one season. So, for example, winter. Or this might be somebody whose gender identity and expression changes depending on the season.
Not their mood, because most of our moods change depending on the season and the weather, but their actual physical, biological, and psychological sex. Their genders. She just discovered this one, but apparently it's been known for a while because on a website called New LGBTQIA Wiki, where they define all of these terms, it's been there. Seasonal gender is a xenogender identity for individuals that identify as two or more season-based genders, the prefix seasonal meaning related to or happening during a particular period of the year. It is also an umbrella term for genders that correspond to any of the four seasons of the year. It is under the main umbrella of aesthetogender. And it just keeps on going. And apparently we're supposed to celebrate this stuff, and we're supposed to bring our children to parades and festivals to absorb this stuff.
It's rare that a Broadview Heights City Council meeting makes news headlines for being controversial. But earlier this week, it did just that.
Some residents expressed, displeasure about Pride. They object to Pride, they object to the organization, and they object to any events surrounding LGBTQ plus issues.
Jennifer Spear runs the Brecksville Broadview Heights Pride organization. On Monday, her and a group of about 10 members went before city council to discuss plans for their second annual Pride Festival this summer. Initially, Spear didn't think much would happen.
We were made aware that the residents would come and, express maybe some displeasure about Pride Fest. Okay, that's fine. We're used to that.
But then she says a lot happened.
We came into a room that clearly was not friendly. We were not prepared for the messaging, the adamant messaging.
One of those to speak in opposition of the Pride event during the meeting, Robert Kylo, who disagrees with Spear on how the night went.
You saw at that council meeting was nearly 100 people that are Broadview Heights residents primarily, just asking the mayor, why didn't you reach out to us to see if this is something we want in our community?
Kylo wanted to make clear that his feelings come from a place of religious belief and not a place of hate.
And my message then and my message now is this good for Broadview Heights? And I think it's already showing that it's not.
Spear disagrees, adding that some of the thoughts shared on Monday night felt personal.
We felt pretty unsafe, I'll be honest with you. When we left, pretty much all of us were on our cell phones, either with spouses, family members, or 911.
But when we told Kylo the safety concerns that Spear just shared, he responded with this.
That's ridiculous. There was not any animosity towards people.
And for whatever reason, the audio on that Fox 8 video clip cuts out there, so we'll stop it there. And by the way, I do understand Spear's concern, because when I see Robert Kylo walking near me, the first thing I do is dial 9-1, and then I wait. Robert Kylo, Center for Christian Virtue, joins us now to expound upon this on AM 1420, The Answer. Robert, good morning.
Bob France, your blessing. Great to be with you. And I'm 5'6", 175 pounds. I've decided I'm now going to identify as a 6'4", 220-pound quarterback, and I'm going to play for the Cleveland Browns, because clearly you can just make things up.
Yeah, apparently you can. You can make things up, and then you can celebrate them on city property in Broadview Heights, from what we're finding out here. Robert, before we get into the specifics of what went down at the city council meeting, can you just speak to that part of this? She claimed that people were on their phones with 911. I would like to know if there's any way we can, put in a request to see the 911 logs for Broadview Heights for Monday night. Because I would like to see if one person felt so threatened by you or any of the others who were at the council meeting so much so that they called 911 to report the threat that you were making. How do you respond to that kind of nonsense?
Bob, one of the speakers from the Pride event not only spoke during the event, but connected with citizens for approximately 30 minutes after the meeting in a very peaceful manner. He never had his phone on. In fact, it was a wonderful dialogue that probably is long overdue. So what I said, and then I guess the audio cut out, I was saying if there was any passion that night, it was for we the people, we the citizens of Broadview Heights, who clearly have felt left out of this equation. And it's interesting, Bob, because you know my story with Cleveland. My wife and family and I were raising our kids there, and we decided to move to Broadview Heights in October of 2021 because it's a community that believes in traditional family values. Never in my wildest dreams did we think that this BBH Pride would come storming into the city in very covert ways, and now it's all coming to the light. And to your point, I'd love to see these calls or alleged calls come to light, because it was peaceful, but it was passionate. And it frustrates us that we the people, as always, they want to try to make us out like we're hateful people. You had young girls quoting the book of Genesis who just traditionally love the Lord. You had pastors and community leaders, and myself included, just advocating enthusiastically on behalf of people. There was zero hatred.
Well, but of course, if you aren't carrying a pride flag with you, then you are presumed to be hateful. You are a bigot. You are a phobe. You are an ist. You are whatever it is that they want to call you, because you are not marching alongside them, and you are daring to question whether or not this kind of thing should happen on city property. So tell me how the whole event came together, because I'm sure it wasn't just organic that 100 people on their own decided to go to the city council meeting and protest this thing. There had to be some coordination. Who's driving it? And tell us what this parade, or excuse me, Pride Fest is supposed to be.
Well, they want to bring this Pride Fest to Broadview Heights, which is traditionally a conservative bastion. They're trying to turn it into a progressive stalwart community for their cause. They're not doing it with the quote-unquote inclusion that they advocate. Secret meetings are happening with the administration, potentially a couple council members. But thank God we, the people, always bring things to light. And there's just been some tremendous community leaders that are longstanding Broadview Heights citizens that are calling them out to simply say, wait a minute, why is this on city property? Are there funds being allocated? Why is no one being engaged? And we were told by a longstanding councilman, they rarely see a group of that size in Broadview Heights. So really, they're trying to do it secretly. We're bringing it to the light. And the question that I asked then and what I'm asking now, does this represent Broadview Heights? And then I'm getting hateful email because I said in the quote from the speech, we're not Cleveland, we're not Lakewood. Of course, I love the city of Cleveland, I love the city of Lakewood, but I don't like their progressive policies. And Broadview Heights is not a progressive city. And I think, if anything, of the 100 people that were there, that's just the start. There's thousands of people. They're flooding emails. I mean, we're getting bombarded with emails at Center for Christian Virtue, which, of course, you know our organization. We seek the good of our neighbors by advocating for public policy that reflects the truth of the gospel, played a leading role in helping to pass House Bill 68. The fight is on, and I mean spiritually. Our battle is not against flesh and blood. We don't hate people, but we can't stand policies that don't protect children.
We're talking to Robert Kylo from the Center for Christian Virtue and a proud Broadview Heights resident who was among the crowd that came to question, I guess, is a good way to say it, the council, the city council in Broadview Heights, about this Pride Fest that's supposed to happen later this summer. I assume it's going to happen during June, the month of National Grooming.
It's scheduled for June 8th, right in the heart of Pride Month. And I'll go back to a comment you said earlier, and I know you were just saying it the way you did, but we are humble Broadview Heights citizens. We're not looking for the spotlight. We're not looking to get our name in papers. We're looking to make sure that our kids are protected. And one of the reasons I brought my three children and now four children to Broadview Heights is that it's considered one of the safest communities in Northeast Ohio statistically. But BBH Pride wants to change that by indoctrinating children. And I'll tell you what, not on our watch. And Bob, first of all, I want to thank you. I know I heard recently you're getting a Patrick Henry Liberty Award from Ohio Values Voters. God bless you for that. You definitely deserve it. But give us liberty or give us death. It's time for Christians and Catholics and men and women of children that love the Lord and love this country to be strong and courageous. In fact, we just had our Columbus Gala Tuesday night with Vivek Ramaswamy. He was on fire. And what he was saying then is what we're trying to say now. If there was ever a time to be strong and courageous, it's now. It's not later. It's not yesterday. It's now. And the voice of the people will never be silent.
Robert, tell me the specifics about what they are planning for Pride Fest. We have seen parades in different communities before, but this isn't called a parade. They're calling it Pride Fest. I mean, I'm picturing, when I think of a summertime festival in communities all over Northeast Ohio, you know, there's the Duct Tape Festival in Avon, the Apple Festival in Elyria, the Melon Festival out in Milan. They have all of these different things. I'm picturing booths. I'm picturing, rides. And all of it going to be geared around this pride stuff, this LGBTQ, and particularly the T of all of that, attempt to indoctrinate and groom kids. Is that what they're talking about here? Or are they specific about what Pride Fest will entail?
I don't personally have all the details, but to your point on the historicity of these events, this is in your face, public ground, engaging the community, and the leader that was quoted from Fox 8, and they're looking to get 500, 1,000 people. And by the way, there's a kids splash pad in close proximity, a playground, a rec center. So the fact that they try to proclaim that, oh, we're just going to do this kind of on our own, they're looking to infiltrate the community at large. I have no idea what happens at a Pride Fest because I'm not interested in a Pride Fest. I'm interested in a family-friendly community that blesses children in a traditional biblical manner.
Yeah, and so am I, but I guess that's kind of the reason I'm asking, because if it's a parade that has a beginning and an end, you can almost just, you know, turn your back. It's not there. Push back against it, by the way, because, again, we've seen the parades where the kids get involved, too. They're up on daddy's shoulders and clapping and cheering as the people with mental conditions march by and in sexually revealing outfits and so forth. But it comes and it goes, and I'm just picturing a festival being a place where people hang out and they get to go up and interact with, and I'm sorry, what, Seth? You do have details on what's going to be involved. Seth has some details, Robert. Seth, what do you got? Tell us.
According to Eventbrite, that's the thing putting us on, yeah. Get ready for BBH Pride Fest 2024, a day filled with pride, celebration, community, live music, food vendors, crafts, vendors,
that's
games,
what I was
entertainment
afraid of.
That will make you memorable events, yes.
That's what I was afraid of, Robert. That's the reason I asked you if you knew, because, you know, a parade, again, I'm picturing an hour or so, the parade begins and it ends and it's over. This is an all-day come and hang out with us and become indoctrinated and get your kids groomed by us. That's what I worry about. That's the reason I'm hopeful that whatever the effort that was that started on Monday night at the council meeting is something that continues, and that is to stop this thing.
Well, Bob and Seth, I appreciate it. I mean, Ronald Reagan, President Reagan, always said, trust but verify. I trust and you verified what the details are. Again, I've never been to one of these events, but I do know this. Where it's being hosted is public ground, and that's why the frustration is with the mayor and his administration who's brought this to our city. And it pains me to say this as a lifelong Cleveland sports fan. The Cleveland Guardians are sponsoring it, as is Sherwin-Williams. Why? And I could go on and I won't. I'm learning the older I get. Sometimes it's better to say things a certain way. But with great enthusiasm, why is the mayor, why is corporate Cleveland and our baseball team trying to bring this to a city that wholeheartedly doesn't want it?
Well, that is a very good question, and one we will endeavor to get some answers on, because, Seth, your new job is to get the mayor on and get city council members on so they can discuss this with us, and even Jennifer Speer, so she can explain to us how this is even remotely acceptable. And you know, it's one thing. You brought up my award, and I was so honored to receive that, the Patrick Henry Award, and you know, give me liberty or give me death. And, Robert, that's what some of them are saying. They are saying in a free country, we should have the liberty to hold this event and to do and say what we want, because that's what freedom is all about. They're the ones who are saying we are trying to limit their liberty. We're trying to stop them from enjoying themselves and doing whatever it is that they think that they're doing. How do you respond to them from that vantage point?
The First Amendment. Thank God for it. Freedom of religion, freedom of speech at the national level, the state level, regional level, local level. They're trying to silence people. And if anything, if Broadview Heights, which I doubt it would, unanimously said, we want this, I would stand down. But clearly, that's not the case. The people are saying, we don't want this. And praise God that Patrick Henry and the boys understood the beauty of the freedom of religion and speech. And the other side, and I hate to say it that way because I'm not a divisive person. I love Jesus. I love truth. I love righteousness. But I love children, including my own. And I'm going to protect them. And if anything, we don't want to see things that are counterintuitive to a healthy community coming to a community in a unilateral way through the mayor's office. And it's just funny, Bob, as an anecdotal story. You know, I ran for mayor of Cleveland in 2017. Mm-hmm. That was quite an adventure. Never in my wildest dreams did I think progressive policies such as those in Cleveland would try to come to Broadview Heights. And in this manner, and if anything, it's about liberty and it's about courage. and it's about speaking what's right. And that's what your show's all about. So if when it's all said and done, we are just attempting to, in a enthusiastic and clear manner, communicate as we, the citizens of Broadview Heights, that we don't want this in our city.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And the fact that it's coming to a city like Broadview Heights indicates to me that they're trying to push the envelope, Robert. It's one thing to hold these in progressive cities where they don't, you know, they don't value their children. They don't value the children's innocence and allowing them to remain kids and to not be exposed to sexually explicit events and to sexual topics of sexuality and so forth before they are even old enough to understand these kinds of things. We expect that in some of the more progressive cities, but the fact that they're doing this in Broadview Heights, the fact that they're starting to move this and force this into other cities means they're upping their game. They're trying to advance this, and they're saying, we're not just going to have our own little corners here. We are going to make this mainstream no matter what it costs. And they're willing to move into and push back, and then they'll call you guys threatening when you go there and push back against them. To say, yeah, we were on our phone with our spouses because we were going to need help. We felt very afraid. We were on the phone with 911 because we didn't know what they were going to do to us. To try to demonize you and to make you afraid of coming out and pushing back and supporting what's right, Robert.
Bob, I've received, and you've known me for years, and you're an amazing champion for liberty, and I'm glad you know my heart because truth sets people free. The emails, the voicemails that have been deposited are hateful. I mean, like, Robert, you're going to hell, you're fake, this and that. It's like, are you kidding me? My personal mission in life is to glorify God by serving others, and it starts with my wife and children. And the fact that a news reporter is knocking on my door yesterday while I'm driving back from Columbus after an epic CCV gala with Vivek Ramaswamy, demanding that I follow up with them so we can get this interview, while my wife is nursing our five-month-old with three kids at home. Like, how intense has this gotten? And I'm just going to say it right now. We are going to stand for truth come what may, and God can do exceedingly abundantly above all that we ask or think. Quick message to people that love the Lord and love liberty. Vivek said it Tuesday night. This is a 1776 moment. Lives, fortunes, and sacred honor are on the line. We've got to lay it all down, because we may never see a moment like this where it's a crescendo of liberty coming up against tyranny. And we all know on this show, liberty always prevails.
Amen to that. Amen to that. Robert Kylo, thank you for being there on Monday and fighting the fight there. Thank you for coming here and bringing it to us and to our attention as well, so that we can continue to try to do whatever has to be done to put pressure on Broadview Heights to do the right thing and to not allow this kind of debauchery and this child grooming and indoctrination to take place on the streets of the city streets of Broadview Heights. Robert, thank you so much.
God bless you, Bob. You're a champion.
God bless you, too. It's 1128, Always Right Radio on AM 1420.
The Answer.
Okay, it is 11:35, and the floor is now yours. After four straight interviews, all of which had very, very different topics, but equal value, we're going to close it out with your phone calls. 216-901-0945, 888-281-1110. Anything you heard, anything you want to respond to. We did a top 9 and 9. We had Dr. Piper. We had Jack Windsor. We had Daniel Street. And we had Robert Kylo. So if you want to respond to any of those issues, let's do this. 216-901-0945. Jan in Brecksville wants to talk about what we just talked about in Broadview Heights. Hi, Jan. Go ahead.
Hi, Bob. You know, I've been involved with Brecksville, Broadview Heights, this issue that Robert Kylo is talking about for over a year. And this group is not just wanting to hold this Pride Fest. I went to the Pride Fest last year and it was held on the middle school, Brecksville Broadview Heights middle school property last year in June, their first one. Mm-hmm. And what they are doing is aggressively inserting themselves into the school and the youth of the community. Even though they deny this, they are still trying to do it. And I've been to school board meetings where they make outrageous demands on the schools for what they want. They want a gay-straight alliance club at the middle school. There's one at the high school right now, Brecksville Broadview Heights High School. But they want it all the way down into the primary grades. And this is part of them. They are targeting Brecksville Broadview Heights, I think, because we've been known as conservative community, but I think they are truly targeting. And I think there's some money behind them. You know, it's a situation that people are becoming wary of it because they're in our face all the time, it seems like. All the magazines, the local magazines, have done spreads with them on the cover and groups of people on the cover. And I think we're just kind of getting wary of all of it. And I will tell you, Jen Spear, I have met, and I think she's they hyperbolize a lot. She exaggerates a lot. So what I heard in that interview is not something surprising to me, because they were right by the police department in Broadview Heights. This is where that event was held. It's like right next to the police department. So
But she used a buzzword that they use, and that is, if you aren't championing their cause, you make them feel unsafe. That word unsafe, yeah, is one that it's a talking point that they use in order to try to demonize and generate anger toward people who are not along with them. In other words, you're either you know what it is? It's classic Marxism. You are either an ally or you are an oppressor. You are either with us or you are one of those oppressing us. You can't be indifferent. If you are not waving the flag with us, then we're going to say we feel unsafe around you. And
they take offense. They take offense at, you know, minor things that most people would forgive for. They take offense at everything. And we humbly want
I don't to even go. Think they always take offense, though, Jan. I think they fake taking offense. They have to generate anger toward the other side, so they say that offended me. This is an attack, and so on and so forth. I don't even think. I mean, don't get me wrong. Many of them are, you know, the snowflake variety, to borrow that term, that do get offended at everything. I get it. But many of them, it is a part of the strategy to pretend that you are being attacked, pretend you are being harmed, pretend you are being offended, so that you can, you know, raise the volume a little bit about the agenda that you're trying to advance.
Well, they don't speak for all of the LGBT community members in Brecksville Broadview Heights, that's for sure. And, you know, we would just want to ask, can we continue to live among each other without being forced to accept, you know, and celebrate personal beliefs that we don't agree with? And that's bullying, and they're doing the bullying.
Oh, 100%. 100%. That's exactly what they're doing. And again, you said it a moment ago, and you're right. They're targeting Brecksville Broadview Heights because it is a more conservative community. Remember, they went from years and years ago to, we just want to be left alone. Don't do anything against us. Then it was, okay, we want to be able to be accepted. It's like, okay, be accepted. Then it became, now we want to be able to force ourselves and our lifestyles into your schools and into your families. It's an incremental climb from just don't bother us and don't harm us and don't do anything, you know, against us, to, if you're not celebrating us, we'll cancel your ass. And I'm sorry for the language, but that's what they've done. That's exactly.
They want us to affirm them.
well, they do. Yeah, they want us to affirm them, and they want us to celebrate them. Look, this is no different, in my view, than the cries for reparations from people from some of the racial arsonists who operate in this country right now. They want people who are straight to be considered inferior. They want people who are cis, as they call it, to be considered inferior. They want to take over, just like so many of the racial arsonists want white people to be considered inferior, and to be not only blamed for everything that has happened historically, even though the people today had nothing to do with it, but that they literally have to become subservient. It's time to flip the script, if you will. Ibram X. Kendi said that the only answer for past discrimination is present discrimination, and the only answer for present discrimination is future discrimination. And it's the same way with the LGBTQ community. If
yes,
you're straight,
I see it as a religion.
If you're straight,
they
and
see
you're,
it as a religion. They, it's
oh,
like
totally.
Religion.
Totally.
And they can try to insinuate themselves into the schools, and they say they're not, but they are, because some of the parents of some of the people at the children at the school are in support of them, that they, you know, I've heard her say, Jen Spear, we are not trying to do that, but they are.
Of course they are. Of course they are. If they're trying to put a club into the primary school and into the middle school,
right.
if they're trying, I mean, of course they're trying to. Look, everybody knows what indoctrination is. It's really, really hard to do to adults. It's very easy to do with preformative minds of the young kids. And that's, of course, what they have to do. They've got to get, this is why the entire Pride Month exists right now. And everything else that they're doing, in allowing in schools, from furries to everything else. This is all about getting kids on board. If you get kids on board when they're young and their minds are mush, you can create them and warp them for life. That's exactly what their goal is.
Thank you for giving this forum to us. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Jen. I appreciate it. And we're going to continue to have more conversations about this. Look, you know what's really weird? What's really odd and strange is I look forward to summer like everybody else, right? We love the summer months. I so am worried about the fact that we're a month and a half away from the month of June. Not worried, but just disgusted by it, because I know what happened last June and what the whole new thing is now. And the entire month is going to be a celebration of this sort of, you know, deviancy and psychological disorders, psychological distress, celebrated rather than being treated. And it's going to happen, you know, all over the country. It literally makes me a little bit nauseous rather than excitable about the fact that summer is about to begin. I can't stand what they've done. John in Chardon. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Hey, Bob. You had a fellow by the name of Ken Polk on your program several times.
Yeah, he was running for Congress.
Right. And he didn't make it. And I think the reason he didn't make it is because people don't know him. And I think he's going to be on the ballot again in November.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.